Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Steve at AGLCA. We've got our usual home port crew of Roger, Beth, and Janice online.
Hi.
Hello.
Good morning.
And today's guest host is Dr. Jerry Reeves. Jerry is an AGLCA member who is about to start the loop May 2nd, I think he just said. But Jerry is just retired as the dean of the Medical University of South Carolina, which is one of the top, 25 medical schools in the country, Jerry?
Well, in some place we would say, I'd say up a third.
Yeah, but Jerry was the dean down there for quite a while. And what he's going to talk about today is what you can expect for medical things and first aid on the while you're doing the loop. And one of the things that's interesting is Jerry and the head of the emergency department at MUSC 2 or 3 years ago tried to come up with a study of what you needed and what kind of illnesses you might run into. And there was nothing in the medical literature about what kind of problems long-term cruisers run into. So, you know, Jerry's going to talk up some about what he learned in doing that and what his ideas are. In the meanwhile, if anybody wants to call in and ask questions of Jerry, you can call toll-free at 877-497-1815. And just as we go along, if you have a question, call. And I'm going to turn it over to Jerry now on doing the loop. What kind of illnesses might you run into?
Well, Steve, anytime you get on a boat for an extended period, and I call an extended period anything from an hour to months, you leave port. And when you leave port, you leave everything that's conventional in terms of medical care. And so you really have to think about this. And you mentioned the research that, we found out that there was no real research on what happens when you go cruising. And so with the help of Great Loop Association, we've done research on that, and it's ongoing. We'll talk about that at the end of the program. But we have learned what you're likely to encounter, and it's convenient to think of this in two ways. One, what illnesses, and then what injuries are likely to happen when you're out on an extended cruise. And you ask about the medical illnesses, and I think that's a good place to start. I think the first thing to say about medical illnesses is that we are all humans, and we all are subject to chronic diseases. And when you look at the people that are actually doing the loop, the demographics, it tends to be a group that's on the whole or on the average over 50, and as you age, you begin to encounter certain medical problems. And so
We're a bunch of old geezers?
Well, you said that. I would only say that the data we have suggests that the people that are out there are in their prime, shall we say.
And, better.
And they have a host of medical problems that they actually had before they got on the boat and that are likely to follow them along the way. Now, in answering the question about illnesses and in looking at our preliminary data from our survey, you could say we can categorize the illnesses into two types, severe and not severe. I've been somewhat surprised to learn that we have what I would call one fairly large incidence of severe, and that's heart attacks. Now, we all know that people that are in their 50s and above are, and women catch up with men, so earlier than that, it's a male disease, but ischemic heart disease is rampant, and it certainly does strike on the boat and on the cruises, and the largest incidence of severe illnesses were, in fact, heart attacks. Nobody died, fortunately, but in the reports we have, but there were we had five people with heart attacks, and so that topped the list of things to expect. Another under the severe category might be respiratory wheezing. Wheezing, if you can't really get oxygen in or CO2 out, can be a very life-threatening emergency. And bronchospasm can be a manifestation of a number of illnesses, congestive heart failure and other things. But that also was fairly common out among...
Jerry, does being in damp weather on the water exacerbate that, or is it just...
Well, yeah,
about the same on land.
That's a good question, Janice. There are a number of allergens out there that if you have an immunological or allergic or asthma that's induced by cold or by some allergen that you breathe in, that can certainly precipitate asthma. Some people have chronic asthma, and as I say, it is a symptom of other medical illnesses. But that does occur, and one has to be prepared for treatment of it. And we'll talk about that a little later on, what to take with you. But that's not an uncommon problem. And then the third most common medical problem that I put in the potentially severe category was bladder infections. And this is more... The other two seem to be gender, more or less male, but bladder infections is more of a female problem. And the reason that can be a problem is if not treated, it can cause pretty severe infections. It can spread to either the blood or the kidney, both of which can have a really difficult, make life difficult. So bladder infections were not uncommon either, and one again has to take some medicines with you that you buy before you go, Cipro, for example, so that when you get the symptoms of a bladder infection, which is burning on urination and foul smelling urine, discolored often, then you go ahead and take your Cipro. And if that persists, you should go get a urinalysis, go see a doctor and get it treated by a professional. So
is there something
yes.
about being on board in particular that might cause this to happen? I mean, is there something about maybe the water or maybe even the close quarters that you're in that would cause more bladder infections?
That's a good question, but one of the difficulties with our own research is we don't have the denominator, meaning we know how many times people reported this, but we don't know how many people really didn't report or were healthy, in other words. But I think these are fairly common problems on land as well as on the boat, and I don't think, with the possible exception of the wheezing and asthma, that it might be due to specifically being on board. Certainly heart attacks occurred very commonly in this age group to people who are on land. And bladder infections are also fairly common.
Right.
So I think the answer to that question is probably not boat-induced. Now, let me move. I thought we'd have trouble with our time, but I see the trouble may be going too slow. Let me talk about the not severe of which there were a number of more not severe problem medical problems. The first being bronchitis, meaning a cough. That was very common. People, and it, as we all know, that can be a manifestation of a viral infection, perhaps even bacterial, or can be any number of respiratory problems, colds and things. Coughs were very common. Most of them were resolved by treatment, but two-thirds did require going to a physician to get at least reassurance. Another one is heartburn. And, of course, the problem with heartburn, which is this mid-sternal burning, is that it could be a heart attack. And people who deny that they're having a heart attack will just attribute it to heartburn. But heartburn is gastric reflux, very common. It was a very common problem out there in the boating community. That probably has to do with things that are eaten. It also has to do with posture. If you lie down soon after eating and you have some gastric reflux, you'll get heartburn. Sometimes if you eat the wrong food, even erect, you will have the same problem. But it's important, if you are suffering from heartburn, take some antacid, see if that takes care of it. If it doesn't, then you really have to start worrying about, is this my heart and not my gastrointestinal tract? But that was common. Another not unexpected was sunburn. A lot of people got sunburn.
That's not surprising.
And we laugh because that's painful. And, yep. Of course, the reason that it's unfortunate is there's no reason that anyone should have sunburn because we have so many good suntan lotions, what it used to be called, lotions to prevent it, and clothing, and so meaning hats, long sleeve shirts, even in the summer, get the breathable non cotton synthetic materials. They're cool, and you should really be covered up the minute you get out of your bunk when you're on a boat, and prevent. Prevent the sunburn, because this was a big problem. A lot of people had it, and although it resolved with treatment, with most people, one person did have to go to a doctor for definitive treatment. So sunburn, which is preventable, 100% preventable, is still a very, very common problem out there.
But do you think part of the problem is people don't realize they can get a sunburn on a cloudy day?
That's right. UV light comes right through the clouds, will burn you, and also you can get sunburn in when the temperature is 30 degrees out there.
Right.
It doesn't have anything to do with heat. It has to do, those people who go skiing, you can go snow skiing as cold as the devil, and you can get really sunburned if you aren't dressed and properly put sunblock on.
Jerry.
Yeah.
Does UV reflect off the water?
Yes.
You can think you're undercover and be getting it reflected from just. Not only,
right.
You can be in the shade and get it because it's being reflected.
Yeah, right. You should wear, that reminds me, part of your protection is, of course, always, always wear sunglasses. That to protect your eyes from damage, but that's also very important. You're right, Steve, the reflection off the water can be as much, almost as bad as direct light. Like we're in a pilot house in our boat, and you can still get sunburned, and there's not a direct ray on you, but it reflects back up. That's a good point. I think that takes care of the major issues with the medical problems. There were some other, there were lots of problems, but hemorrhoids, constipation, chronic diabetes, is all those were also notable in the number, and each of which has its appropriate therapy. But people who are diabetic should really talk to their doctors before they go, make sure they can handle both hypoglycemia and hyperglycemia. They should test as recommended by their physicians. I find diabetics to be very knowledgeable patients, and because they have to be, but it's still a chronic disease, that needs to be monitored carefully, and there were some people who got out of control and had to get medical care while they were out on their boats with their diabetes. So I think that hits, Steve, the main illnesses, and what's next?
Why don't we talk about what kind of injuries you ran into in the study?
Well, there were a lot more injuries than there were illnesses, not, I guess, unexpectedly. Because when you are out on a boat, you let's begin with saying you're not on a stable platform.
Yep.
The boat is rocking and it's slippery. It's very different than being on land. We're not acclimated. I don't care how much cruising you do, it's not the same as being on the good old terra firma. And so we had a lot of injuries, and I didn't categorize these into life-threatening or acute or bad versus not so bad as we did with the medical illnesses, but top of the line here was sprains. People sprained about anything you could sprain, fingers, ankles, backs, and sprains are common, and of course they usually result from a fall. They can result from over strenuous activity, but sprains were by far the biggest problem. Fortunately, only of the 17 sprains that were reported, only two had to go to the emergency room. So people got pretty good at taking care of their sprains, but they are the very common prop injury out there on the water. The next most common was abrasions, which means skin, leaving skin on the boat and off of you, and cuts, lacerations. Again, there's any number of ways to get those sorts of injuries on a boat, and they occur frequently. Also, bruises were a big item, again, from falls or hitting things, generally related to the unstable nature of the boat, but or the conditions under which one is trying to move or work or do things. These, again, were handled by the people with their own first aid, which we'll talk about later, and only one required going to the emergency room of the 12 problems. Tendinitis. Almost everything was musculoskeletal or orthopedic in nature that occurred to people. Tendinitis was a big problem. Every joint has tendons, and they tend to flare up again. And these are generally, again, treated with non-steroidal medications like ibuprofen. But very common problem. Another common injury, of course, required treatment was broken bones. Again, almost not every bone, but almost every bone known to man was broken and broken out there. But a wrist is a big one. Leg and then fingers are commonly subject to breaks because of trauma, falling primarily or hitting. And these did all, for the most part, require going to a physician to get, or emergency room to get taken care of properly. But so be prepared for that. You got to be prepared for broken bones, and we'll talk a bit about that. But the main thing is to immobilize. Just don't let, if you suspect you've got a break, and you don't really know unless there's a bone perforating your skin, but if you think there's a possibility that your arm or whatever is broken, immobilize it. Have whoever you're with put you in some form of a splint. And a good splint actually is using a personal flotation device, PFD, and just put tape it really tightly, and that makes a good splint if you don't happen to have one of those SAM splints with you.
Gary, if I can just intervene, I don't want to be scaring people terribly. Do you have any statistics on the percentage of people that do face problems when they're cruising? I mean, is it a large number or is it a very small number?
Well, you and I, you know, the problem with our research is we don't know the denominator, but let's figure it out right now on the air. How many people do you think are at any given time out there cruising at AGLA? Because this is mainly AGLA.
I would say 500.
Okay, and we had... We during the course of about a year, we had 70 report something. So that's not a huge percentage.
That's not
big. Of the
13%.
Yeah, and of the bad things, I mean, there were five heart attacks out of 500. That's one in 100, 1%.
Yeah.
So, and that's the worst. That was the worst thing we had. So it's, and you know, in this age group, that's probably even
gonna happen.
That's not an I would say that's not an unexpected number. So I don't think it's, I don't think people should be afraid to go cruising because of all these weird. I mean, the whole purpose here was to get 4 to 5 people with information so that when they go, they do what they're likely to, but the likelihood, overall likelihood is remote.
Maybe we could go on to medical preparation and what people should do to be prepared.
All right. Yeah.
Well, just one of the things is Jerry made a presentation at one of the rendezvous about what you should take on board, and the slideshow for that is on the website. So
great.
when he finishes with what you ought to have on board, you can actually go look at that, and it's out there.
In fact, that's what I'm looking at to answer that question. Because we put a lot of thought into that, and I think we made one recommendation that on the slides that I probably would back away a little bit from, and that was that we recommended that you not take a commercial kit. You know, I think people who have a boat can afford to buy a commercial kit. You can do it cheaper without one, but there are a whole host at West Marine, or there's a website. Let me give you a website that's pretty good. www.buyimp, that's buyemp.com. It means buy emergency medical provider. stuff, but buyimp.com. You can get anything you need on that website or any other that to Google for medical supplies and probably equip yourself cheaper. But I would start with one of the kits that's available in the $30, $40, $50 range because it's got the fundamental materials that you need. But what you need is you need medicine, and I'm going to take this in a little bit of an order. You need to take the medicines that you are already on, and unfortunately, most of us in this cruising crowd are on medicine. So be sure you take those, and you take prescriptions that are multiple prescriptions or that you have them at least online and can print them out because if you lose them or if they fall overboard or whatever, you may need to get more. Also, it's a good tip for these chronic medications you're on to always buy them at one of the stores that's in many of the cities. Rite Aid, all the rest of them, the Walgreens, whatever syndicated, and they'll have your prescriptions. But take the prescriptions also from your doctor because you need your own medicines. Then the other medicines that I think the most important ones are aspirin, which is used for everything from heart attack to pain relief. I already mentioned taking Cipro.
Jerry,
yeah.
One of the things that I was never clear on is if you think you're having a heart attack, you're supposed to take some aspirin. My question
right.
is how much?
Well, at least one full strength. Just for the heck of it, I myself would take two, and you go ahead and take those immediately if you think you're having a heart attack, and if you've only got baby aspirin on with you, take about four of them.
But it's not like you want to gobble down a dozen of them.
No. A little bit of aspirin goes a long way.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So you want to take some antibiotics, and these you have to have. You have to get before you go from your doctor their prescription. But the Cipro, you need a broad spectrum antibiotic like amoxicillin, and those two should be with you. Then non-prescription medicines that you should take with you or ibuprofen, and that goes by the the trade names of Motrin, Advil, Midol. They're all ibuprofen. For washing out wounds, and the thing you really need plenty of, in my recommendation, is betadine. And I have a big gallon jug of it. But anything that you cut and just want to clean, betadine is the way to go. A lot of people think alcohol, but that can do some damage. You need to dilute it at least. Don't put it on undiluted. But betadine is very good to wash out anything it's very appropriate for cleansing. And then take Vaseline. And people wonder about that, but Vaseline is actually a wound. You can put that on a wound after you've cleaned it, and it's a dressing. It becomes a dressing for the wound.
Well,
so,
I know,
Jerry, yeah.
I know you said in the presentation that you made that Vaseline works as well as an antibiotic cream.
Yeah, and it does. And you don't want to get it out of something that it's. It doesn't have to be. You don't want it to be really dirty where everything has gotten in it. But if it's clean, it's a very good dressing. Very good dressing. In terms of the stuff the non medicines that you want to be sure you have is
just.
yeah.
The half hour is going to be up in about 10 seconds. If we get cut off, we're going to have you back. But in the meanwhile, we'll just keep going until we run out of whatever happens.
All right. Yeah, I'm sorry. This is taking
too
long.
That's all right.
You need it. You need adhesive tape and ACE wrap. Remember, sprains was the most common problem, and you need to wrap those. Band-Aids, certainly. Sterile bandages. It's something that we've talked about at the rendezvous is take a big box of menstrual pads. It's cheaper than buying a bunch of big gauze. If you really have a big wound that you need to put compress, and it's much better to use a box of those pads just as needed to put on, and they're clean, and that's a good way to stabilize a wound. Be sure to take blood pressure cuff, thermometer, and scales, weight scales for you. Everybody does their engine checks every morning. They ought to do their physiologic check, and they should take their blood pressure, temperature, and they should weigh themselves every day, and they should keep a log, just like we'd keep an engine log, and you should keep your medical log and kind of watch your weight and watch your temperature and watch your blood pressure every day. Then in the kit, the last two things are tweezers, good pair of tweezers, about 20 tongue depressors that you can get at any drugstore. Those are the fundamentals that have to be the main things in either of the kits.
One of the images I always have from the slideshow.
Yeah.
I can't remember the doctor's name, who is the head of
Larry Rainey.
Well, he used the tongue depressors to stop a nosebleed by taping a bunch of them together, and he has a picture of himself with the tongue depressors on his nose.
Right.
So it's hilarious.
And that way you don't have to keep your finger on your nose. Yeah, if you get about six tongue blades, tape them together with the adhesive tape we talked about, spread three on each side and make it like a good clothespin and put it on your nose, and that takes care of the nosebleed, and you can leave it on for 20 minutes, which is what you need to do when you have a nosebleed, and it should stop bleeding, and you got your hands free to do whatever else you need to be doing. Yeah, that's a good point, Steve. But I'm looking at this recommendations we had on the slideshow, and if people do go to that, I think it's very complete, and it's got everything that one should take. I've told you the most important things, but everything is listed quite thoroughly on your website.
That presentation is at our webpage, and in case you don't have the address, it's www.greatloop.org.
And Larry?
Yes.
This is Roger.
Roger.
I think that what a lot of people would like to know would be actually ways to take care of the injuries while on board. They're not going to have medical attention. I would probably recommend at least a first aid class for everyone that was getting ready to do a prolonged cruise.
Yeah, I think that's right, a basic first aid class. And also, One of the things that we recommend is take a first aid book, and there are a number of, I agree, take the class, but also in case you forget what you learned, and the problem with learning in a class is you may forget. There are a number of good the one I like is the Boy Scout Be Prepared, first aid book. Those of us that are boys had it as boys in the Scouts, and it's easy to understand. There's a first aid manual put out by the American College of Emergency Physicians that you can get online at Amazon. That's quite good, and those are two that are well illustrated and show how to take care of most of the, I would say, all of the common problems that you're going to have on a boat, even though they were made, of course, for land. But there are some for the sea. But those are are less expensive, and they're beautifully illustrated so that even if you can't read, you can see what to do by looking at the pictures.
Yeah, I would also recommend people probably go out and get a CPR class prior to going out too.
I think that's absolutely important, and especially now that I've seen that that people really are having the problems on the water, the big problems that they have. Yeah,
They're making those portable defibrillators and things. I mean, they are kind of pricey, but that's a good thing to have on the boat as well.
It is, but that's one where you really do need to know how to use it or don't buy it. So you have to not only buy it, but you have to get the instructions on how to use it as part of your resuscitation. It can be life-saving, no question, and then any number of times they've saved lives in airports and golf courses and certainly in gymnasiums and on boats.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the health survey now, Jerry?
Yeah, I would like to talk about that because you can tell the beginning of this, we've got information now about what's happening to people, but the reason we have that information is we've got a bona fide clinical research project that's through the Medical University of South Carolina here. It's approved by the Institutional Review Board. It's scientific, and we plead with anyone that's out there, nothing is too minor to report, and certainly we want to hear about all the major problems. But what this is a very easy survey. You go to the AGLA website and it directs you a member page, and then it's top of, last time I looked, it was top of the of
members
the,
only still is.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's where it belongs, because it's important. And you go on it, and then it's really simple. It says it asks you what has happened, and then it's a pop up menu, and you say what you did. I mean, you say what happened, then you hit what you did. You hit then what the final outcome was. And then you hit submit and it's over. One of the questions it does ask you at the beginning is what's your height and weight and age, and it's totally anonymous, so we don't have personalized data.
The only thing that the MUSC could possibly come up with on who put that in there is that it came from AGLCA's website.
That's right.
So because you're going through our website, there is not even any information on where you were when you got into the survey. It always looks like it came from us.
Right. And it's totally anonymous, and yet it's really turning out to be very rich information because when we get, another 100 or 200, when we get to 200 or so, or 300, some number, up there, we'll kind of close it out and report it, make a final report, put it in the medical literature. Certainly it'll be on the website, the Great Loop website. But it's only as good as having the members and cruisers report their medical issues. And we need that data. So we need splinters, we need heart attacks, we need strokes, we need blisters. We need the little, the big, but we need to know what's going on so that people who are cruising, thanks to the Great Loop Association, will know what to expect and how to be prepared for any emergency or non-emergency that occurs while cruising.
Is it still one of the goals to eventually do a medical handbook for cruisers?
Yeah, and we will amplify on that and talk about preventive measures, which we didn't have time to do today. But everything from diet to exercises you can do on the boat to prevent some of the medical problems, and then all the first aid stuff of the things they're likely to see, and we now have a good idea what they're going to see, but we always need more data. But yeah, in the end, we will have a publication, we hope, that allows people to do what we call healthy cruising, which means stay healthy, but if you do have a problem, how to treat it intelligently.
Great. Thanks, Jerry. It's been great.
Well, it's my pleasure, and we're proud members of the association, and I think you do a great public service, and we're glad to be a part of it.
Well, I think we're going to have you back again to talk about some of the stuff we didn't get to today.
Well, be happy to do that.
Okie doke.
Thank you very much.
Janice, you want to talk about what's coming up?
We're not streaming, so I don't know if anybody really wants to know.
Well,
you can go to our webpage to see it. But next week we're going to be having the managing editor. I'm sorry, actually the general manager of Waterway Guides, Chuck Baer. And he's going to be talking about changes, the history of the Intracoastal and changes along the Intracoastal, which is basically the waterway on the East Coast from Florida to Chesapeake Bay. So join us at 10 o'clock next Friday morning to hear Chuck.
Good. And
okay.
For anybody that listens to this that's not a member, I think you can see some of the benefits of joining. And if you just go to www.greatloop.org, you can sign up to be a member. What we found out is when we ran out of live time, which we set at 30 minutes, it continues to record the show. So some folks may have missed it and may need to go to the website to pick up the last 10 or 15 minutes.
I'll have to. I will make a note of that on Facebook if they came to the end after half an hour, if they want to hear the rest of the show, to listen to it in the archives.
Yeah.
Because it's all there.
You might want to send that same message to the forum in case they're not on Facebook.
Okay.
And other than that, I think we're done. Thanks,
okay.
Everybody.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.